Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Welcome to the Squawker Talker podcast. I'm your host, Greg Johnson, and you're joining us after a fantastic week of Champions League football, the Europa League still to come, and the Premier League and other European leagues are also going to kick in again at the weekend. I am joined by Nick English. How are you doing, Nick?
Hey, Greg. How are you doing?
I'm not bad. James McManus is joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. And Rory Briggs is here again.
Great to see you. Great to be here.
Briggs is on fire. As I say, we're going to start with the Champions League. I mean, what a week. One of the greatest games of the week has been Celtic versus Man City. No one really saw this turning out as it did.
I didn't actually see it, so no one really saw it coming, and I didn't actually see it.
Well, James, I'm going to come to you first. But it's the first coach to blunt Pep's winning streak is Brendan Rodgers. It had to be him, didn't it, Nick?
I don't know if it had to be.
For narrative reasons, it had to be Brendan.
I feel like Brendan Rodgers is going to be dining off this for a very long time, given that it's the only truly competitive matches he'll be taking charge of.
Is this like Wilshire at the Camp Nou?
Pretty much, yeah. This is his Wilshire moment. No, I mean, Celtic looked very, very good last night. They really caused Man City some problems and probably gave Pep a lot to think about, because Pep knows he's clever. He'll know that other managers will be looking at that game and going, right, that's how you get at Man City. Mm. Pep was let down a bit by the defence. Kolarov was awful. But no, Celtic look really good. And they've got a great record in the Champions League. I think it's the first game they've lost in 8 Champions League group games. I mean, you know, for a team with their sort of resources and the talent they can attract, they do pretty well.
Away matches in the Champions League are a bit of a weak spot for Pep Guardiola. He's 1-4, drawn 10, and lost 7 of his last knockout games away from home. We haven't got any stats at the moment for the group stages, but that's a 19% win rate. Compared to Ancelotti, who I think last season had about a 30% win rate. It's not great, is it, Rory?
Well, it just shows that Ancelotti is superior in Champions League. He's won it more times than any other manager. Guardiola has got people know that he's got a chink in his armour. It's something to exploit. You know, he nearly managed, what was it, 11 wins, 11 straight wins, could have matched Tottenham's record from 1960. Didn't happen, so I think the weekend will be a big test for him.
Is it a case of intensity? The intensity he asks his players, Maka, in terms of their tactics and their kind of individual form, that Pep just can't make it happen in the Champions League?
I think a lot of those defeats are him refusing to compromise. He doesn't change his style of play or his system for anybody, whereas the traditional thinking is if you're going away from home, it's a tricky game. Not that I'm saying they shouldn't be beating Celtic anyway, but last year, for example, Atletico Bayern, as Bayern boss, went away from Atletico and torn apart. Happened again with when he was at Bayern, Real Madrid as well. So his refusal to compromise his core principles that sees him not set up in a defensively sound way away from home, when Carlo Ancelotti is ever the pragmatist, will do that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, after the week we've had a question from Twitter from Ricky McLean. Is this the perfect antidote from a British managerial perspective to a week of bad news and dodgy dealings around British football and their managers, with Brendan Rodgers beating who many people say is the best manager in the world, in Pep Guardiola?
Well, it was a draw. But
he outfoxed him, didn't he?
It's a win. He outfoxed him to a certain degree. I mean, yeah. Moussa Dembele's 2 goals were fluky to the extreme. He didn't mean to put that bicycle kick there, and one went off his chest, but his all-round performance deserved it. It is a nice antidote to see Brendan Rodgers, you know, get a draw. I mean, he's taken a massive gamble on his career by going to Celtic, essentially. Liverpool to Celtic, it's not, you know, that. It's not what most people perceive as the sort of shift in quality. It's very difficult to prove your managerial acumen at a club like Celtic. In terms of the perfect antidote, I think, no, British managers, they've been very much tainted by this news, but this is the stuff that we know about, and this is the stuff that we know about in the English leagues. You know, you talk to anyone who's in the know, football management and sort of the deals that go on are extremely sketchy. So it's only been revealed about the English managers, but right now, but you know, it could have happened to anyone. Not that it should have.
I think Rodgers gets he makes as many as he misses tactics wise. He stumbles upon a recipe sometimes. When he was at Liverpool, started playing three at the back, Emre Can's at right back, and it turned around, and I think it was a streak of like 12 games of just absolutely rotten form, and went about 15 unbeaten, and then it slowly faded away once teams adjusted to Liverpool playing three at the back. Against Barcelona, he played five at the back, but absolutely dismantled. And
it's a weird five at the back as well. They just kind of stood in one line. There was no stack.
Yeah, it was just. But I like that he tries stuff. He's a coach that thinks, and he's easy to mock. Sometimes he deserves to be mocked, but I think he's like Nick said. It's not an amazing move in terms of his career going to Celtic, but he will win trophies up there, which has been the main stain against his career. So I can see him doing well at Celtic and coming down here. He's not going to come down here and take the Bolton job like Neil Lennon did. He'll come down here and do what Martin O'Neill did and take a Villa level, got a bit of money, higher mid-table job next, which is kind of what he needed to re-kickstart his career.
Yeah, huge improvement from the Barca game as well. 7-0 to that. Deserves a bit of credit. Yeah,
definitely. But Roy, I was going to ask you, because you were at the Emirates last night for Arsenal's 2-0 commanding win over Basel. I mean, it was confident. It was kind of complete performance, especially in the first half, from the Gunners after beating Chelsea. What does this result say about Arsenal? Is this just form, or could they be a genuine contender for trophies on all fronts this season?
I think it was a joy to watch, but we need to keep our sort of feet on the ground. It was a pretty weakened Basel team compared to previous seasons, who they hadn't been beaten by an English team on English soil. So before that, you're thinking, well, Basel, you know, might cause a bit of an upset. You're thinking Zagreb and Olympiacos games last season didn't go Arsenal's way, but yeah, completely different situation this year. Straight off the Chelsea as well. Very similar to the Chelsea game in the fact that it was first half blitz and then second half, bit of a sort of downgrade. Pretty sort of passenger football for most of it. But it was Walcott's night, I think. And everyone's loving him at the moment. It's all the Walcott sort of season. Big turnaround. And it makes you wonder, going back to England managers, it's probably the best thing Roy Hodgson did for him was it not take him to the Euros, and he had to think about himself in the summer, have a reappraisal of himself and think, I'll go back to the wing. It worked out. He's now linking up with Sanchez. That's going well.
He's five goals in seven this season compared to five goals in 28 in the league last year. So, I mean, whatever's happening, it's certainly working for him finally.
Yeah, and even though he probably still wants to be a striker, he did have 9 touches inside the box against Basel. And, you know, he did score twice. So he still keeps that side whilst actually working pretty hard for the team down the right wing.
Nick, we've looked at Walcott there and everyone's been raving over Sanchez of late, but Mesut Ozil, is he kind of the key to why everyone's kind of doing a little bit better individually? He's not so much making himself the front man of the team of all his assists like he did last year, but I don't know, I've been seeing a difference in him this year maybe.
Mesut Ozil always was at Madrid a player who looked great when the players around him were playing great. Last year was a very different season for him because he made Arsenal look much greater than they actually were. He was really carrying that team in a lot of games. This is why Arsenal fans kept, you know, moaning bloody murder when he wasn't getting the appraisal he deserved. Right now he's purring because whenever Granit Xhaka steps on the pitch, it lets Santi Cazorla go forward. Granit Xhaka drops in to collect the ball. And actually yesterday he didn't have that great a game, granted. He lost the ball quite a few times. He got caught out a few times. But he drops in, he receives the ball, which is something Coquelin can't do very well. Santi Cazorla can go forward, and then Ozil's just got this incessant little Spaniard darting about him, offering a passing option. Yeah, he's looked fantastic. You know, he's always going to be getting assists, but he makes our play so fluid in the final third, and he's great on the counter. So it makes a huge difference.
Well, if you look per 90 compared to last season in the Premier League, he's creating slightly fewer chances this year, but he's taking far more successful take-ons, like taking the ball past people. James, do you think that's a part of his game we don't see enough? Maybe that's why he doesn't get the praises on an individual basis that some people sometimes deny him?
I mean, he essentially retired at international level Gareth Barry, didn't he? By skinning him on the outside, and Gareth Barry still has nightmares about that, guaranteed. But I think you are seeing kind of a different Mesut Ozil. Mesut Ozil is at his best when he's got pace in front of him that he can play balls in behind to, because he's got the sort of vision that very few in the world can match. And Real Madrid were the greatest counter-attacking team in the world when he played for them. And Arsenal don't really play counter-attacking football to that same extent now. They're very much, it's like peak Arsenal 5 years ago, how you imagine them to play in your head when you think of a vintage Arsenal performance. That's what Arsenal are playing at the moment. But the one I'm most excited about is Alex Iwobi. I think he's just so good. It's that you can see Ozil likes playing with him, and Ozil and Iwobi are never more than 5 yards away from each other. They sort of gravitate towards each other, out wide on the left or out wide and on the right. And you couldn't think of a better playmaker to learn off than Mesut Ozil if you're Alex Iwobi, could you?
Yeah, he had some nice words for Iwobi actually pre-game, Ozil. He said it was a mixture of his uncle, JJ Okocha, and Edgar Davids.
Nice.
Pretty fair press, yeah.
Mm. Tenacious, yeah, creative. Mm. Beautiful. We're going to just quickly bash through the other two English teams who are in the Champions League this week. Leicester and Spurs both won 1-0. Spurs go into Russia to have a test of character, some people were putting it, in Moscow. They passed that 1-0. Son scored the goal. Slimani was also the man again for Leicester, scoring a goal for them. I think they call him the Dragon Slayer because of his record against his rivals in Portugal, former Sporting player.
Casillas was like, I really don't want to play against him ever again. He scored six goals against me in the last year.
Try saving some of his shots.
Yeah. But they both look very good. I mean, both players are... I mean, Slimani's come in and made an instant impact, but Son, I think we said in the last podcast as well, it's taken him a while, but he's really doing it for Spurs now, isn't he?
I mean, he offers them pace out wide, which they've never really... They don't really have that option. People are saying, I'll move him inside. Not every winger should be a number 10. I don't get why that's a trend in football now. He's good at that. He's good at stretching the play. He's quick, and he's got a fantastic strike on him, so stick him out wide. The Mailer... He's great at tracking players down and pressing. He's fairly creative and he can pick a moment of magic out, but he's not the quickest, is he?
Mm-hmm. But never mind sticking wingers inside the number 10 role. Rafael Guerrero for Borussia Dortmund, he arrived in the summer as a left back. He's been playing everywhere else, pretty much.
In the hole,
absolutely. And they got a great result against Real Madrid, 2-2. They had to pull it back in the end with a goal from André Schürrle. But it means that Madrid haven't beaten Dortmund in their last six attempts at Dortmund. I mean, it's a fantastic record for the German club. Nick, how far can they go this season, do you think, in the Champions League?
Well, it's Dortmund right now are in a place where they keep raising the bar. It's very, very similar in terms of results and how the teams that they're matching to when Klopp took Dortmund on their Champions League run.
Mm.
Really settled squad, really, really good side. Everyone knows what they're doing. The use of Rafael Guerrero by Thomas Tuchel is really, really interesting. Because he's just a very intelligent player with, you know, cracking stamina, speed, strength. He's got all the capacity. He's a very all-round footballer. How far can Dortmund go? I don't know. It's a 2-2 draw against a Real Madrid team that have looked a bit out of sorts over the past week and a half after winning basically like a ridiculous number of games on the row. Ronaldo's in full peak tantrum mode at the moment for some reason, but he still scored a goal.
That's what he does, isn't it?
Yeah. That's his thing, which is kind of great. I love that. but yeah, I don't know if we should, you know, it's a 2-2 draw at home against Real Madrid. I still expect them to lose at the Bernabeu if, you know, Real Madrid turn it on.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. We're going to move over to Madrid now for Atletico 1-0 against Bayern. I mean, they're and that's another tie we, I think, in previous pods expected Bayern to kind of take charge there. But you look at Simeone's record in the Champions League, 23 clean sheets under Simeone, just 20 goals conceded under Simeone in the Champions League. That's an unreal record for any club. But, I mean, Atletico, he's built them into an absolute powerhouse. Rory, what will you make of Atletico?
Well, I think they can go pretty far with a manager like Simeone to do this. I think they're going to be the dark horses again this year. They keep seeming to do it, but I think this will probably be their biggest chance. After that, Simeone... not going to keep his contract after he's now limited himself to 2 years.
All a bit confusing, isn't it? He hasn't really said why he's doing that. It's just a bit like,
he wants the Inter job, doesn't he? It's he wants to manage where he played for.
Mm. Yeah, so that will be, you know, the final push for him.
Got a stat on Simeone in the Champions League with Atletico. In 18 home games as Atletico manager, they conceded 4 goals. Works out as a goal conceded once every 6 hours, 30 minutes.
Wow.
At home in the Champions League.
It's absolutely absurd.
Which, I mean, you consider the level they're playing at and the teams they're playing against is what?
Yeah. And they're not even that good this season. I mean, they pulled it off again.
Functional, though, aren't they? They're playing within themselves, but when they do that, they're even better defensively.
They create a lot of chances still, that's the thing. And then, you know, getting areas that you don't think that sort of team, that kind of setup, would manage.
Mm. Could have won three if Torres hadn't wasted his chances as well. He hit the post from about 3 yards out.
Mm-hmm.
It's a penalty.
Strange player now, though, isn't he, Torres? He great movement. He does a lot defensively, but just can't hit a Ballon d'Or.
I mean,
Or Ballon d'Or.
The Ballon d'Or. Ballon
d'Or. Speaking of Ballon d'Ors, Neymar, it was an absolute fire against Gladbach. He now has as many assists in the Champions League this season as Manchester City and Dortmund, their teams, not players, and more than Bayern and Juventus. I mean, Messi's injured, but who needs Messi? You've got Neymar.
I think it helps that Barca are in a fairly straightforward group. Mm. That, I mean, you play Celtic at home with Suarez and Messi, you're going to do it right. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd back myself to get an assist in that scenario.
Oh, go ahead, Maka. Go for it. Go ahead. I mean, yeah. It's Mönchengladbach are really struggling a bit this season. They seem to have lost a bit of the sort of organisation and the attacking movement.
Maybe they've lost Granit Xhaka.
Yeah, maybe they lost Granit Xhaka. They seem to have lost some of the structure which made them so good. I mean, when their star striker Raphael has been, you know, electric for the past couple of seasons, but this season he's got the most completed take-ons in the Champions League. But what that shows to me is that he's getting isolated and he's having to beat people on his own, and then there's nobody there to pass it to, rather than someone who's like, oh my God, Tekkers.
Yeah.
You know, that's not necessarily a good thing.
It's a good way of putting it.
Thanks.
But the system they do play, I think it's like a 3-4-1-2. If you can kind of shut down the supply lines.
You made that up, didn't you? You made that up. Yeah. Does that even add up to 11?
3-4-1-2? Oh, yes. I'm sure it does. Shout out to all the mathematicians out there. If it doesn't, please send those tweets in. But final one we're going to look at is Dortmund 4, Dinamo Zagreb 0. I mean, Dybala, he's arrived. He's finally scored his first goal of the season. And interestingly, Dani Alves, who they signed from Barcelona in the summer on a free, is now level with Sterling and Neymar for Champions League chances created this season with 9. I mean, they got him to try and win the Champions League. That's the trophy they're wanting the most. He's won it, what, 4 times with Barcelona? 3 times?
3, I think. 3? But
he won more than I have, basically.
He
so
won
it's,
two Europa League/UEFA Cups with Sevilla as well.
So if you're going to get a European specialist, he's your man, isn't he?
Absolutely. Sure? Interestingly, after the weekend's games, Gonzalo Higuain said about Dybala that he's not playing close enough to me. So Higuain's scoring a fair amount of goals. I think he's got 4 in 6 in Serie A. Dybala hasn't scored in Serie A yet. And it's interesting that he's moaning about his strike partner. Same nationality, a bit younger than him, both world-class players, and he's not in bad form, and he's got the pressure on him, but he's still critiquing Dybala's game. Mm. So it's interesting that he...
Jealousy.
Yeah. Youth on his side.
The new model.
I do like Gonzalo Higuain coming back from holiday, being bought by Juventus with all the Pogba money. Just a barrel where his stomach used to be, just looking absolutely enormous, like, you know, reclining seats automatically when he got on that private jet to fly to Turin.
He's a 90s footballer, isn't he?
He's such a 90s footballer. Yeah. He just ate pies or whatever the Italian equivalent was, pies all summer, and then just turns up to Serie A, licks his fingers from his latest snack, and then goes, right, I'll take a hat trick, please.
He's done a bit of a Maradona, isn't he?
Yeah, there's a bit of that. Yeah, he's so good. He's so good. Mm. And you just think, like, if you had the same sort of dedication to the game that someone like Ronaldo has, I mean, Christ, or Lewandowski, like, how many goals would you score?
Mm. But I wonder if like, their plan is, like, Higuain will sort the league, we'll just win the league because he'll score the goals.
Yeah.
And then Dybala, Dani Alves, all these lads that win us the Champions League.
All these lads.
All these big Italian lads, although neither of those two players are Italian. Anyway, moving on to Italians and other nationalities, the Golden Boy shortlist has been announced. Mm. The best young players in the world, one nice big
all the best boys,
there.
Yes,
all the very best boys.
Cider house rules over there. Good night, you boys of Mayo.
So, Rory, who are the most deserving shouts to be boys on that list?
I think, you know, your eye is immediately drawn to Rashford, Iheanacho. Iwobi, actually, now I think it's still pretty early for him. Obviously, he hasn't scored anywhere near as many goals as the others, but he's still chipped in with assists and more chances created per 90 than Rashford in the outshow this season. But yeah, I think those two, I think it's between them still. There's a lot of talent in Europe. Deserve shouts. Probably you go for like Renato Sanchez as well.
Mahmoud Dahoud, is he?
Yeah, I mean, I do like Dahoud, but I just think, he hasn't really like gone on to great things. And in the way that I think there are other people on the list who have. I mean, Leroy Sané as well.
Yeah.
I really want to see him at City this season. But I think there's enough there to go around. There's some other interesting stories in the list, but we can go on to them in a bit.
Yeah. Mm, fair enough. James, who are the players that caught your eyes? Have you been surprised by any inclusions?
I mean, I'm surprised Damari Gray has made the list from Leicester.
Mm. It's a good goal against United, though, wasn't it?
I mean, is that what it takes?
It's a bit of a panic selection, that, isn't it?
I think Loftus-Cheek has done pretty well to make any list.
Yeah.
Donnarumma would be, or Ousmane Dembele would be my shouts, or maybe even Andreas Christensen. I researched the stats before I came on, and his pass accuracy in his last five games is absurd. It was 96% against Man City, even though they lost 4-0 against Barcelona last night. It was 89%, about 92% average in Bundesliga this season, and he plays as a sweeper, and he's 21, so he's an absurd.
And Chelsea is apparently lacking a central defender, and they're not playing him. He's a club back. But anyway,
I've got a shout out to Amadou Diawara as well, who was at Bologna last season, and now Napoli, moved £12.3 million in the summer. Interesting story about him is that he's still 19. He was playing for a church team in Guinea for a while before he went to the San Marino of all places. I'm not sure whether there's a San Marino club that sort of is by default the national team.
There is something like that, I believe.
And then he got picked up by Bologna, and so now he's on this list with this sort of selection of people. That's pretty big. So
I mean, Vardy's getting a film. I can't wait to watch that.
Exactly.
He's got the best X Factor backstory.
Yeah.
By the sounds
yeah.
Donnarumma just got like picked up from school one day.
Yeah. I can't wait to hear that. That's going to be great. Nick, is there anybody yet that stands out? Maybe, I mean, have you got a front runner in your head on that list?
Renato Sanchez. I think he was brilliant at the Euros. Bayern Munich signed him. He went straight into the Bundesliga looking pretty good. Ancelotti dropped him for a couple of games. But, you know, he's
got too many midfielders,
he's
though, hasn't he?
So, I think it's between him and Rashford.
It's got to be Rashford, surely.
He'll
win this on his debut as well. By the way. Rashford just loves debuts.
They might give it. Yeah, exactly.
Lingard will add that.
They might give it to someone else because Martial won it last year. I'm surprised to see on there is Yuri Tielemans. I swear he's been nominated for the last 7 years or something.
He's the oldest teenager of all time.
Literally just keeps being a teenager, but he's not been that good for. He's not been good for a while.
Do we know what Peter Pan is in Belgium? Is it Yuri Tillmans? good answer.
I believe.
To round off this wonderful segment, which is for me has been a highlight, I'm going to ask the pod, would you rather be the golden boy or have the highest rating for a youngster on FIFA 2017? James, I'm looking at you, which means you're first.
I'd rather be a golden boy as it's real.
I'm a real boy.
Well, that's
back
been punctured.
Bang into Peter Pan territory.
Interesting one, yeah.
I mean, if you're a youngster and you're coming through, I think it's better commercially for you to be the youngest, best, highest rated youngster on FIFA.
Now you're hedging your bets.
I am hedging my bets. But you look at the past winners of the Golden Boy, and pretty much all of them have gone on to do something in their career. Maybe besides Pato. Anderson has at least played in the Champions League final.
This is true.
I mean, Balotelli's the one there.
Van der Vaart won it, and he was the first one to win it in 2003. And he still had a fairly decent career. He's still knocking about. Where is he now? Is he in Denmark, Sweden? I think.
He's Michelin, isn't he?
Michelin, that's it. Yeah. And but like Messi won it. Luis Suarez won it.
Yeah. So, look what they did.
Look what they did.
What would you do, Rory? Would you rather be a golden boy or a highest rated of your FIFA?
Probably the FIFA one. I just think golden boy sounds a bit sordid. And also boy as well. I think if you're, I know you're a teenager, but
you want to be like, young
man. Young sort of adult.
Do you want a trophy saying man. Best young adult? Is that what you
I want, PG.
That's getting into dodgy territory now.
Interestingly. Then we'll move on. Nick, what would you rather be?
I'd like to be the highest rated youngster in FIFA.
Thank you. You've said it with a bit of enthusiasm. I was expecting this.
Yeah, why not? I don't think... Who cares about being golden boy? What an inconsequential award. Yeah. I don't care.
It sounds like something from Only Fools and Horses, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does
golden
a bit.
Boy.
If I was a pro footballer... Okay, disclaimer, I do play a lot of FIFA. Right? Let's put that out there.
He's not a pro footballer.
Yeah. And he's not a pro footballer. The second disclaimer is much more important than the first one. But... if I was a pro footballer, I'd be like, brilliant, I'm gonna pick up FIFA. Oh, I'm better than everyone else in my age group. Yeah. Unlucky, guys.
It's like whilst you're playing FIFA, you're not going to go to your mates and go, oh, look at that award on my mantelpiece. It's a ball.
I would. I'd carry it everywhere with me.
Yeah. Might slow you down on the pitch.
I don't know. I'm pretty slow already. But interestingly about the Golden Boy, the last three winners all play for Man City or Man United. Mm. It is Pogba in 2013, Sterling in 2014, Martial 2015.
Which means so, Leroy Sané is on the win.
Iheanacho and Rashford. It's the final showdown.
Oh, wow. Well, speaking of final showdowns, it's not final at all because it's only the, it's going to be the start of October. But still, Spurs are taking on Manchester City in what looks to likely to be the match of the weekend in the Premier League. I say that because in the last 10 games together, there have been 44 goals scored. 44. That's 4.4 goals per game. Easy bit of maths ever because you just divide by 10. It's beautiful. Mm. Is this the best non-derby match in English football at present, James?
It's a big call.
That's why I'm asking it.
I'd go Everton, Man United, just because there's a bit of a needle in that game. Everton fans hate Man United fans. And Man United fans couldn't care less, but they always end up as quite interesting games, I think. Mm. United have a pretty poor record at Goodison Park, don't they? So
it's going to be a good game, though. I mean, it's first versus second. Spurs have been really, really good. Okay, they're missing Harry Kane, but Dele Alli is yet to really kick on. The Dembele injury is an issue, though, for Spurs. Whenever Dembele's missing, it looks like they're adding that sort of that cog between the two gears, which are the incredible defence they've got from Pochettino, built on Vertonghen and Alderweireld, and that attack, which is very fluid. Mm. Pochettino would have been looking at that Celtic game and just absolutely licking his lips because he's A, great tactician, B, really knows how to pick the players to suit the situation, and C, he's great at on-pitch management. So it's like, from a tactical and managerial point of view, it's going to be a really interesting game. Obviously, Man City have the much better players, but Spurs as a unit are probably the best squad in the league.
Arguably, you could say Alderweireld is the best centre-back in the Premier League. Yeah, I think you could.
Between him and Koscielny.
You can definitely argue it,
I think you could argue it. I'd rather him than Koscielny, to be honest, Alderweireld. Yeah, there was a good quote from him before the CSKA Moscow game. He spoke about how last time he played away in Moscow, he was at Ajax and they got battered 3-0. And he was quite a young team, played with Vertonghen and Christian Eriksen was in the team. Pretty much the heart of the Spurs team now. And he said, at Ajax, I was taught an education. I was taught my technique and how to pass the ball. But at Atletico, I was taught how to defend. Because we forget that he played in that Champions League final where they lost 4-1 to Real Madrid. And then they sold him to Spurs. When we went on loan to Southampton, then they sold him to Spurs.
It's weird that, weird that you didn't keep hold of him.
Mate, Jose Jimenez.
They just don't need him, don't need him. But I think Aguero isn't he's not played against a centre-back pairing like Vertonghen and Alderweireld this season. It's a big test for City. They are walking games a bit, but they've not really had a huge challenge yet. I don't think Mourinho's United were ready for Guardiola's City.
They did this last season as well, City. They won everything at the beginning of the season. Mm. And then they came up against one tricky game and they went, whoa, okay, what?
Well, also, one of the reasons why they fell off track last season was the injury to Kevin De Bruyne, who's been one of their best players this season. Rory, how do you think they're going to overcome his absence?
Well, I think you've still got the quality to come in for him. I think you don't really need to kind of bring it, like, have a sort of real panic about it. I think Silva and Sterling will pretty cover pretty well. I think Sané should get a shout for this one. Why not?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, Gundogan coming in and reaching full fitness, and he's looking great, means that Silva can play in the hole. So, yeah, De Bruyne's a big miss. He's a great player, but David Silva's, like, amazing. Let's not forget, he's one of the five best players in the league. He has been for about five seasons. So, it's not that big a miss.
Absolutely. Maybe it wouldn't be a question of creating chances, though, because as we saw in the Champions League, as we talked about earlier, against Celtic, that was the first time Manchester City has conceded two goals under Pep Guardiola. Maybe they're a little bit uncertain at the back at the moment. Maybe there's something that Spurs can do to really kind of get amongst them. They've got Son. He's in great form, as we said earlier. So who knows? Watch this space, I guess. Could be a great game. Anyway, we're going to move on now to Burnley versus Arsenal. The artisanal solidarity of Sean Dyche versus the artistic chemistry of Arsene Wenger.
Yeah.
What's going to win out? Rory?
Both. No. I think it's
sounds like
bit...
Sean Dyche is making a sandwich with Arsenal's all solidarity.
Careful how you say that one.
Bit of gravel in there.
I think it was tricky for Arsenal last season. I think it was just a sort of Aaron Ramsey late winner in the end. It's a big test for them. It's like, well, we've beaten Chelsea, we've beaten Basel, but now we're back to sort of square one in a way. Sanchez on his own, can he really cope with that type of defending? And Walcott, the same thing. I just don't think they'll get as much space as they did at the Emirates the last two games.
They're very well organised. That's one thing you can give Burnley. They're very well organised. And they're very good at actually picking apart bigger teams' game plans, as we saw against Liverpool. Nick, Arsenal always seem to find a banana skin to slip upon at some point, don't they? Or could this be? Could it be different this time? Are they actually going to keep this form going, even against the big teams or small teams, when the adrenaline's high, when the adrenaline's low?
I think the most impressive thing about Arsenal in the past four or five games is not how much they're winning the games by, but how comfortably they're getting it done. Mm. They're cruising at the end as well. Like, Basel didn't get a sniff in midweek. Chelsea didn't even get close to scoring a goal, really. And I think, credit to Wenger, like, he doesn't normally get this right, but he has to rest some players this weekend because he's played Cazorla, Ozil, and several others three games in a row. So we're going to see a rotated squad. Mm. And I reckon Oli Giroud's going to come in specifically because he's looked at Burnley and he's gone, big man up top, and I'm just going to surround him with various pace. Mm. He might even go 4-4-2 with Lucas Perez and put Elneny on, who's brilliant at just keeping the ball away from other teams.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, the momentum's good, but Arsenal have way more than enough quality to beat Burnley, as good and as well-organised as Sean Dyche has them.
Let's see how good Michael Keane is up against the magnificence.
20 million, isn't it?
He's been let's see if it's, how much he's worth after Giroud's been at him, eh? Well, anyway, just on the point of Arsenal at the moment, obviously the 20th year anniversary of Arsene Wenger's arrival in North London is upon us. And to mark that, we've done a wonderful special Arsene Wenger 20 years podcast with Nick. You were on it. It was wonderful to have you on. And also Hush Karai and James Bench from the London Evening Standard. We're going to play a little clip now. If you like it, listen to it tomorrow. We talked there about what Arsene Wenger means to Arsenal. One thing I didn't ask you guys beforehand is what it means to the Premier League, but I think you've kind of summed up there. You kind of raised the level of competition, raised the sophistication level in English football.
Yeah, managers are now expected to get top four every season. That's the expectation that's placed on Mauricio Pochettino, and that's because of Wenger.
Mm. But also, I guess he made, this might be a controversial point for some people, but he made Ferguson a better manager because he had to raise his game to that level. Some people have talked about Mourinho making the Premier League much more tactically sophisticated, much more high-quality league, but I mean, if you can argue that Wenger was the first guy to really ratchet up those levels.
I mean, those fights in 98-99, I mean, the Man United treble-winning team were incredible, but they had to go to those heights. You know, Ferguson had to buy Dwight York because they couldn't keep up with Arsenal, and an Arsenal team that were kind of not spending a huge amount. Yeah, I mean, he brought the absolute best out of Ferguson, and I still think for all that we wax about the Premier League nowadays, that peak was really those years when Man United and Arsenal kind of between 97
clash, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were just beating each other to a pulp every season, and that's why most of the time they couldn't get very far in the Champions League, because they were just destroying each other.
That was a great snippet from our Arsene Wenger 20 years podcast special, also featuring some drop-ins from Amy Lawrence and Gilberto Silva, would you know it? Well, anyway, we're going to move on now to more Premier League games. Swansea are taking on Liverpool this weekend, and Francesco. We got there in the end. He's looking like he might be the first manager to get the sack since the start of the season. Swansea aren't looking great. They've kind of lost what was great about them under previous managers. Could Klopp be the man to kind of, you know...
He's
one,
gone,
one
he?
Loss too many.
He's gone, isn't he, Guidolin? I mean, if it's coming out on reports that it happened 3 weeks ago that they were considering his future, and then one came out 2 weeks ago that the squad was unhappy with him after Ki-Sun Young and Neil Taylor got annoyed that they got subs during the game, and then it came out this week that the chairman's met Bob Bradley at Swansea Airport. Mm. Firstly, I didn't know Swansea had an airport.
Actually, it's a good airport, yeah.
Is it? It's a good airport.
Yeah,
okay,
it's a hub of Wales, South Wales. Yeah.
A hub of Wales, okay. Yeah. Well, we've met Bob Bradley. There's Ryan Giggs, just needs a managerial job. And he's clearly... I mean, I think even if it's a draw, I think he's gone, to be honest, because it's the perfect time to sack a manager just before the international break.
Absolutely.
I mean, Klopp's Liverpool, and just this is as good as they've been under him. So it's going to be another 4-1, 5-1. Mm.
They do look fantastic, and Klopp has really succeeded in imprinting his style upon Liverpool. But Swansea have kind of taken a step. They look a little bit like... They're not just bad, they look like everybody else in being bad. They're not really Swansea loner anymore. Is that a bit of a tragedy in itself, Rory?
Yeah, I think I used to love watching them with Leon Britton, of course, and Ki-Sun Young himself dictating play, creating that kind of interesting style. And you're thinking, well, how are Swansea still in the Premier League? This is why. Mm. And also because of the sort of defensive zeal of Ashley Williams at the back.
Zeal.
Yeah, and Fabianski has been a great servant for them since he's moved, but despite having like Llorente and Borja Bastón, who are two pretty good strikers for Swansea, considering they had Gomis and and Marvin Emnes and a sort of
Ayew as well.
And Eder before that. I mean, the better striker acquisitions.
You mean Euro winner Eder?
I mean, yeah, he's a favourite of mine, but you know, he needs to face reality. So yeah. But I think it's a shame really, and I think Guidolin's not gonna save it for them. He's not gonna turn that team around. And if Ki Sung-yong's annoyed, then you know serious problems are happening.
Yeah, I mean, Swansea, one of those teams we're going to look back in January and go, oh, actually, we weren't paying attention, but Swansea have been rubbish for like 18 months here. I mean, they're pants. And if you're the manager of a team like Swansea and you're next on the chopping block, I mean, I couldn't think of a worse opponent than Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool right now, a team that just relentlessly attacks.
And he smiles while they do it as well. It's really unnerving.
Yeah, and like suffocates you. I mean, it's just like the worst team you could possibly like want to face in front of your home fans as well. I mean, you know, they might get a jammy result, but like they're going to get annihilated. Klopp is ruthless in these sort of situations. He's going to name his best 11. He's going to try and walk out of there with an 8-0 win. You know, obviously we'll see, but it's really not looking good for Guidolin.
I think you've seen the impact of no European football on Liverpool already. Mm. It's just Klopp has so much more time to train his players, and he's happy to train. He doesn't like transfer windows. He might get rid of a lot of players, but he's not interested in high turnovers. He's a proper football coach, Jurgen Klopp. Mm. And I think you're seeing Lallana, Mane, Firmino, Coutinho. There's no guarantee. They're all on fire, but I think the good thing is they're not guaranteed a starting place still.
Mm.
I think maybe Lallana is probably the only one there. Maybe Coutinho as well is guaranteed a place in that starting 11.
And what about Sturridge?
Sturridge is...
What's happening with him then?
He's been in and out.
I mean, his role has been reduced to that as an impact sub. I think he'll move to somewhere in London, January, maybe end of the season, because... When Sturridge got injured before, it was, oh my God, how many games do Liverpool have to deal with him being sidelined? How big are the games? Whereas now it's like, oh, it's okay, we've got Firmino up there, so that's fine.
Mm. We talked about Sean Dyche being a sandwich artist earlier. Maybe that could be, Sturridge could go back to Subway. Maybe that's the, that's the key.
Brutal.
Absolutely brutal. We're going to move on to our last game we're going to be discussing now. Manchester City versus Stoke. Don't worry, United fans, we haven't forgotten you exist. You are playing the Europa League as well on Thursday. So we're going to tie that in as well, because that is going to affect how they approach the Stoke match. But they're going to be playing against Zorya Luhansk in the Europa League. Both games are also home for Man United. Could this actually, instead of having a Europa League hangover, could this actually be a benefit to Mourinho's team? Get a bit of a rhythm up. What do you reckon, James?
Yeah, I think, I mean, Mourinho said if they don't win tonight, they'll probably have to win all of their remaining four games to qualify out their Europa League group. So he will play a pretty first 11 tonight. And also, he's only won one game out of that run. They play very well against Leicester, but the pressure is still on. It's there lurking behind.
Mm.
They slip up against Zorya, then that piles extra pressure on the Stoke game. And I think if you look at United's fixture list, it hasn't been that tricky, really, up till now. Mm. Stoke at home are probably the worst they've been under Mark Hughes. Zorya, I mean, we've done an article called Five Things You Need to Know About Them, because no one knows anything about them. So... I mean, it's said tonight it's going to be a straight shootout between Mkhitaryan and Rooney, between who gets the starting spot.
Although they are apparently both injured.
Both injured?
Yeah, they're both ruled out.
Maybe the straight shootout went a different way. Yeah. It took it a little too literally.
A duel. And they both winged.
Oh, God, this was a bad squad bonding trip.
They both just winged each other. Shades of Cheney.
But on Rooney, is there a way for him back into the team now, Nick? I mean, United looked liberated, if you will, against Leicester. Paul Pogba especially looked fantastic.
Yeah, there shouldn't be. I mean, although Leicester's midweek performance is putting everything that they're doing into context, because now it looks very much like players like Vardy and Mahrez are like, do you know what? Don't really care about the league that much. Let's just focus on the Champions League, which makes total sense, because they're going to comfortably get 11th in the league, because they can whack some teams about if they really need to. But why not go for the Champions League? From a United point of view, and for Rooney, I mean, there shouldn't be a way back for him, but there is going to be. Allardyce's transgressions in the press means that he's probably going to get a starting, and Harry Kane's injury mean that he's probably going to get a starting striker spot alongside Rashford for Southgate's England, and that means that his stock will increase, and that means he's going to get another starting spot for Mourinho, and the Rooney brand trundles on and on and on and on, because he's undroppable, because sponsors have paid for Wayne Rooney's face, and if he's not starting in the 11, their sponsorship isn't worth as much, and it's absolutely exhausting, and it shouldn't be that way, but it is.
I love modern football.
Imagine paying for Wayne Rooney's face.
Yeah. He is their biggest marketable brand. Yeah. He is their brand. Because if he's the Man United,
if Adidas want to be number one in China, they want Rooney, basically. Yeah.
It's mad though, isn't it?
Yeah, but going back to Leicester, don't they remind you a bit of like a football manager save when you first qualify for Europe with a team that doesn't quite deserve to be there?
Totally.
Yeah.
Like they've lost 4-2 to Chelsea in the cup, they just beat Bruges, lost 4-1 to Man United, then did pretty well against Porto. I think it's worth remembering about United though that against Leicester, three of their goals were from set pieces.
Mm.
As much as we want to say they did look really good without ruining the team, I think it's too harsh to blame it all on him not being there.
Maybe stick him in, but don't let him on the corners.
Daily Blind take corners because he's amazing.
He's got more assists than Ozil.
One last thing on this fixture. Well, not there's two fixtures to talk about, but I'm now going to talk about the Premier League one. Stoke, they're yet to win this season under Mark Hughes. What's happened? Is it just deja vu every season now for Sparky?
I think it's actually James said it the other day. Is you look at Stoke's squad and it reminds you of when Fulham went down. You just look at their squad and you just go, what? What's that? They've just got so many random players. And
it's like a Puss 3D box that's been all screwed up, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And also, they've really suffered from the dip in form of Ryan Shawcross. Mm. Ryan Shawcross has been woeful this season.
They missed
Jack Butland so massively. You can obviously tell at set pieces, it must be Butland who's organising them because they've looked appalling at them.
Yeah.
But Shawcross's dip in form, I mean, it's perplexing, really. I don't know if they made a tactical change or something. Sorry.
They're also sort of hampered by, in a similar way to Leicester, the set pieces. They can't grapple with players in the box as they had done.
Oh, that's an interesting point.
So maybe that's, you know, this is a serious rule change that's going to affect points, basically, at the end of the season.
Boney looks like horrifically short of fitness as well, because he's basically been a part-time footballer for 18 months now. Mm. He's not used to playing three games in a week, and his touch looks completely gone. There's rumours as well of dressing room unrest about Mbula. Apparently, Sek completely secludes himself off from the rest of the squad. So
he's arguably one of their best players. Maybe he's just like, I do not want to be.
He's another like when I turn it on type player. Yeah. Mm. So
was there any reason why, or just say he was?
I mean, I think he got shipped out of. Was it, where did he move? Was it Marseille?
Marseille, yeah.
And then he left there after 6 months. So I think, or it was maybe even shorter than that. And he barely even played for them. So maybe that's why he left there.
It's not exactly a harmonious squad he's walking into. I mean, you look at some of the characters they've got, Arnautovic, Shaqiri, like, imagine sharing a dressing room with Marco Arnautovic. I'd be scared he'd be snapping my neck if I turn around or something.
The thing is, you look at the front four on paper, and it's as good as Everton's, isn't it?
Mm.
Mm.
Like, it's not this. It's a top eight front four. It shouldn't be if Koeman 18th, had that 19th, 20th. Yeah.
Okay, it goes back to what you say about football manager. It's the kind of side you'd build on football manager.
Yeah.
And then
go down with.
Yeah. But anyway, just to bring us to a wonderful, lovely, natural end to the podcast. Fixture of the weekend across Europe. I want to hear the match you guys are all going to recommend for our listeners to tune into.
I've got one for you. On Saturday, it's Bayer Leverkusen against Borussia Dortmund at 5:30. Javier Hernandez scored his 100th European goal. 100th goal in Europe, for Leverkusen midweek. They came back their last game in Bundesliga from, they were behind twice, 1-4-3. And they're playing Dortmund, who I think have scored 22 goals in the last five games. So that one has got 3-3 or something written all over it. It'll be entertaining at least.
Loads of interesting players as well to watch out for. Nick, what are you going to pick?
Curveball. I'm going to go to Ligue 1. PSG are playing Bordeaux on Saturday. Fourth and fifth in the league. And so far, I think PSG have got... Unai Emery's got a real problem with his PSG team, is that he's obviously been brought in to win the Champions League because he's such a good manager in Europe. And as a result, after cruising the league so comprehensively for so many seasons, PSG have just been focusing on the Champions League rather than Ligue 1. No player exemplifies this better than Marco Verratti. He's got by miles the most passes completed in the Champions League for PSG, by absolutely miles. But in Ligue 1, he's nowhere to be seen on that list. Mm. Adrien Rabiot is by far their better competitor.
Mm.
They look like a team who just we just want the Champions League, and if we don't win it, a couple of us are going to be moving on.
Yeah.
And Bordeaux are quite a nice little lively team. They're very well set up, and it could be an upset. And if PSG lose that game, it gets a bit awkward to start catching up. I know they've got great players and everything, but I could see some unrest happening, so it could be quite a pivotal game in the league title there.
Monaco look absolutely solid this season as well. Fabinho in centre mid.
Mm.
They've Thomas Lemar out wide. They've just got Sidibe's just got his first France call up at left back. So they're very young, hungry, fit.
A team of golden boys, almost.
Yeah. A team of golden boys.
Yeah, look, and Nice are unbeaten in that league. They're actually top. Monaco look, do look the better squad.
Nice, I think. You'll
like the biscuits. Like,
there's a factory where they make them in that city. It's what the city was built around. Nice.
Nietzsche,
I think.
Monaco are the better team, but Nice look good. So there's some competitive teams for PSG to overcome there.
Nice, baby. Anyway, moving on to Rory. What's your match of the weekend?
Segway of the week.
I'd have to go for FC Dallas. Versus LA Galaxy.
And they're playing in Russia, why?
it's a 2 a.m. Fixture in Dallas. And, no, of course not. It's Everton Palace.
I think with the MLS one, really.
Yeah, if you fancy, if you're off at 2 a.m. But on a Friday evening, I think Palace-Everton's quite going to be a tasty one.
Yeah.
Everton lost against Bournemouth. Palace actually looking like a team again. Going to be tasty.
Yannick Bolasie return.
Yeah. That's true. That's
Everton
true,
fans singing his song. Palace fans getting really annoyed they're singing his song.
Jagielka marking Benteke.
Yeah. Ooh.
Benteke's got about 4 inches on him.
Benteke, Lukaku's quite a nice, interesting paradox as well.
It's proper football. Yeah. That's what it's going to be, isn't it?
McCarthy-MacArthur, that clash of the Titans. If the Hamilton Academical Titans.
I need to lump on a red card in that game. McCarthy-MacArthur.
100%. Well, that's also our betting preview done there by Nick. So I guess that's the natural end of the pod. Thank you very much for joining us. It's been fantastic. As I say, we've got a very special Arsene Wenger 20 years podcast coming to you very soon. I believe that will be out tomorrow, just ahead of his 20-year anniversary on October the 1st. So do check out that. It's nice, long, and full of wonderful people with lots of wonderful Wenger memories and opinions. Otherwise, please follow us on Twitter at Squawker. Check us out on Facebook. And yeah, see you soon. Thanks for listening.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait. You mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Goodbye, truckie.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other truckie.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.